Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Going for Two. I am your intrepid host, Matt Brown. I am the publisher of the Extra Points newsletter. I am joined here, as always, by my co-host, Brian Fisher. Brian, I'm glad to see that you're alive and that you seem to be awake. That's not a bad place to be after these past couple of days.
Yeah, a little sleep deprived after a lengthy NFL draft. It was great to see more of a return to normalcy on that front, and hopefully that kind of portends a lot in terms of our fall watching for college sports as well. So trying to recover from that, but excited about this week's episode because I know when we started this whole thing and we kind of listed out some of the topics, this was one of the first things I thought about because it's such an unknown entity, esports, and I'm really excited to talk with our guests today and really kind of dive into some of the aspects that I think a lot of people are just unaware of.
Yeah, this comes up in most conversations I have with athletic directors and academics and administrators generally. And it's interesting because most of them don't really know a whole lot about like the blood and guts of esports. Let me ask you this real quick. Are you much of a gamer, Brian?
You know, it's funny because last week I watched Mortal Kombat, the movie on HBO Max, and I just the flashbacks I got from watching that updated movie to actually playing the original video game way back in the day, you know, and taking cartridges out and having to blow on them to put them back in. Like that's the generation I come from. Certainly do not play as many games nowadays. Obviously, having a small child is a big contributor to that. But, you know, back in the day, loved to play video games. And I think for, you know, a lot of Americans, a lot of people around the world nowadays, I think it is becoming more of a part of their daily lives, whether it's on their phones, you know, on the bus or commuting or, you know, really sitting down to stream on those next generation consoles. I think it's certainly a growing industry and one I'm tangentially a part of, but certainly back in the day was way much more of part of my life than it is now.
Real quick, do I need to watch the new Mortal Kombat movie? I heard the original Mortal Kombat movie was terrible. Is this one good or is it just the pandemic?
This one's fine. I have a huge nostalgia for the original Mortal Kombat movie. So it's tough to top that one just in terms of the nostalgia that I feel for it.
Oh, but, sure.
You know, this one was all right. You can tell that they are setting this up for we're going to make three or four of these. This is going to be our new franchise for HBO. So I think that was more of the focus on this one. But fun to think back to those early 90s and remembering some of the fond memories I have of that. But it does kind of invoked it for a lot, really the new generation of sports fans. You can have those connections of the past. I mean, and I think we'll get into that a little bit as well. There's a huge connection between what has been happening, you know, 5 or 10 years ago versus and where the industry can really go from here.
Yeah, I don't even think I saw the first movie, and the video game could not have been more of a contraband, I think, in my house growing up. I might have actually gotten in less trouble had I brought home drugs than had I brought home the original Mortal Kombat, which is pretty funny to think about now when you actually like stick it in the Sega Genesis and like look at what the violence actually looks like. No, like, I mean, I'm in a similar boat, right? I have, we're close to the same age. I have a 6-year-old and a 2-year-old, and that does make gaming more challenging, but I have a PS5. I play FIFA. I play NBA 2K, and I like playing video games, but the games that I'm tend to really play are sports games, old Super Nintendo games on the Nintendo Switch, which I play with my girls, or first like narrative one-player games, right? I got into The Last of Us. I got into Mass Effect, and those are not games you typically play online. They're not consumer spectacle kind of games, and they're not the sort of games that are really popular within esports. So like, I intellectually know that esports is a big thing, but like, do I go home and play League of Legends? Like, I know League of Legends exists, but that's not on my PC. That's not really my world. And for a lot of my old colleagues and many my sports writer friends, they're in a similar boat. So we thought it would be a good chance here for us to talk to somebody who actually does know what they're talking about beyond just the superficial association with video games here. I wanted to bring on a gentleman named Alan Ignacio, who runs the esports program at San Jose State University. He founded that program. He's a student there. He's been heavily involved with it. And is also somebody that's really a deep thinker about the esports industry, which is evolving a lot. And thought we would bring him on here and answer a couple of dumb questions that we have about esports and how it fits into how we think about college sports in general, because I think these two groups have some things that they can teach each other. Thanks so much here for taking some time to chat with us. I'm really excited about this. I love getting a chance to learn from people who know so much about things that I am not as familiar with. One of the things that I'm really curious about with this explosive growth in esports at the college level these past couple of years is when I look back at the history of college football or college basketball or talk to administrators at smaller schools, they maybe didn't play football or basketball, but they've been watching it for a while. They're very aware of it, right? But when I talk to some athletic directors or some of these conference commissioners, even at the esports level right now, they don't know Super Smash Brothers from Pong. And they definitely haven't played, league or haven't played an FPS in forever. I'm curious from your perspective, have you noticed, are there mistakes that you think administrators are making or, as these programs start, or have there been times where you've been working with people at your school or people in this community and think like, man, you have no idea what the hell we're actually doing here. Has that been your experience?
Yeah. Happy to lend some insight on that. First off, thank you all for having me here. Happy to educate anyone on the world of collegiate esports. I think in regards to that question, one of the things that most administrators understand is that they're going to learn so much from the students and the community that was grassroots built within their campuses. I hope that administrators, when they do eventually tackle on esports, they sort of come in with an open mind and go full on transparent of what they do know and what they don't know, instead of thinking that they can imply traditional sports thinking, philosophy and mindsets onto what is essentially a brand new kind of demographic that don't usually engage with the rest of traditional sports. So in terms of mistakes, I usually don't see them as mistakes, but more as just like learning opportunities for them to see what works and what doesn't work. Obviously, for the past 3 years that I've been running esports at San Jose State, it's a lot of learning from both my director and myself. My director also runs the rest of the club sports system, all 32 other teams. But esports is just a brand new thing to that entire faculty. And I learned, they learned so much from me. I learned back from them, and whatever decisions and roadmaps that is spawned and created from the two parties here can hopefully morph into something in the grander gaming community and leave a positive impact on students.
Sure. I appreciate that. One of the bigger differences that I've noticed is that when we look at football or water polo or volleyball, right, the university administrators themselves, their athletic directors, they get together, they control the rules of the sport. You know, college football is run by colleges. But when I look at esports, right, like San Jose State doesn't own the license that Riot Games controls. Like San Jose State can't get together and say, no, for this tournament, these are the rules of the game. We're going to nerf X, Y, and Z. Mm-hmm. And the scoring is this way. It's run by an outside company.
Yes, correct.
Has that distinction or been an issue for administrators? Has that made things more challenging from your perspective, or is that just part of the world and you just roll with it?
It is definitely part of the world. One of the biggest things that is so inherently different as an esports athlete is the emphasis on the ability to adapt to what the changes are in the game. So I'm going to reference League of Legends a lot because that is the one that I've ran the League of Legends team for the past 3 years, managed it, and saw the dynamic meta, as it's so to speak, or how the game is played in the professional scene. The ability to adapt is humongous in terms of competitive success and players learning how to just how to work with that meta and see how it could fit along with themselves. It is just the natural part of trying to be the best in esports is to learn and adapt, because Riot Games, the ones who develop League of Legends, will be changing the game very often. And that is just the accepted norm in collegiate esports in general too. As for administrators, the challenge on them is to ensure that the team can operate and have an emphasis on adaptability when that patch note comes out, when a new change arrives, when a new hero comes through, or a new weapon in some other video games. Just that, in terms of administration and collegiate, it is on them to hope that they can emphasize such a needed skill for these players.
So, Alan, you mentioned League of Legends there, and I'm yes. sure a lot of the regular sports fans know FIFA and Madden and all that. Mm-hmm. What are some of the titles and companies involved in esports at the collegiate level that we should know about beyond League of Legends?
Of course, and happy to answer that too, because it is, you would think that sports games can just dive right into collegiate esports and coexist, but the difference is how the developers invest into that community, because League of Legends, Riot Games, they are the one funding the prize pool for the ultimate tournament, the national collegiate tournaments. Other games, so it's very dependent on the developer to invest into that player base, into the collegiate scene. And that's where the most of our games are based off of. The other games that have seen much development thanks to the developers is Psyonix with Rocket League. Riot Games also owns Valorant, a new brand new shooter, first person shooter that came out last year. They're investing into that heavily as the game goes along. And comes off being brand new. Blizzard Activision with Overwatch. So those are just to name a few. But when you look at games that are very prevalent in collegiate esports, is the ones is where the developers put a lot of investment, a lot of money for the players, and have the infrastructure and build the infrastructure for those tournaments to exist on a national level.
I'm glad you mentioned investment, because this is something I'm really curious about too, because, you know, I practically wrote a book on this about some of the financial and structural investments that universities have to do to say, to get a football program off the ground. You need a weight room. You need scholarships, sometimes 85 scholarships, maybe 30, 40 scholarships. You need lots of meeting spaces. You need a staff of like 12 different people. And I think a lot of our audience are generally familiar with, okay, you're going to have to drop like $5 million, even if you're a Chico State and you want to start a football team. But one of the things that's appealing to a stodgy administrator is that it doesn't take $5 million to build an esports program.
Not at all.
But it does take some money if you want to do it well.
Yes, correct.
So I'm curious, like, okay, let's say I came to you and say, listen, Alan, I got 300 grand here to go build a really powerful brand and program here at San Jose State. What are we spending that money on besides scholarships?
Good question. You want to you not only want to invest it on scholarships and find the people that can go into San Jose State and represent San Jose State at the highest level of their game. You want to invest into the gaming community itself. Basically, the hard answer to this question, you want to have a space on campus, a physical space on campus that supports the gaming community. What that space would look like is, if you Google a LAN center, if you go to gaming bars or places that have nothing but lines of computers, rows of computers, top of the notch in every aspect, in all the specs of that PC, and have the ability for the campus to recognize that demographic of the gamer, where they can go into that space and just have fun and make it a part of the college experience. So if I was given a blank check, I would immediately invest in a recreational space, because it benefits the general gaming community, the competitive teams programs within the gaming community, and San Jose in general, or San Jose State in general, because ultimately the goal is to have student retention and to show that, you know, you're paying so much out of tuition, but this is what we're investing it on, and this is how we're heightening your campus experience.
You know, that's so interesting. I was talking to somebody who was involved at Sacramento State, and she was telling me that, like, you know, one of the biggest challenges we've had over the last year is, you know, we're still able to practice, but there's so much of our what it means to have an esports community is literally about the community part. And we still have people on our team that literally haven't met each other because we haven't been in person. It's hard to coach remotely. It's hard to figure out our ping situation if we have different internet connections and we're all over the place. And she's like, we've had to go off campus.
Yes.
But being able to meet in the same place would would be like the number one most important thing. And my understanding is that like that's still somewhat uncommon in some places. There are college programs that, you know, I think Irvine has a facility in Oklahoma State, just built one, but there are plenty of others that are just like, maybe we'll be in the engineering lab. Maybe we have to go to a bar. Not everybody has one of these, right?
Correct. And that's kind of the landscape with collegiate. It's a very Wild West situation. It's same like esports in its infancy a decade ago. We're just trying to test the waters and then figure out what is the good formula that most colleges can base off of, and it'll successfully work. We are still learning that in the realm of collegiate esports, the best ways to actually invest into a program and to get not only an ROI, but just to meet the goals of student retention along those lines. It is also true that my players have not met IRL as a team, obviously thanks to the pandemic, but also even in pre-pandemic times where there really wasn't a reason unless they endeavored to, because there was not a space on campus for them to meet. They would rather play at home. You get ping issues. Oh, and it's even worse on campus. My goodness, on-campus housing cannot support the hard to believe, considering we're in the Silicon Valley, but it is the damn truth. That on-campus experience with gaming, I also myself dormed for a little bit of time, is incredibly challenging to what is required from a player in terms of that kind of infrastructure. It is very different. University, if you want to look at a collegiate program, you pick any university, it is all over the map on where they are in terms of infrastructure, what they look like as a club. Is it run by the faculty and a person being paid to do so, or is it student run? You know, so it's so different.
And that's also what makes this so fascinating, because you know this was the major debate with college athletics in the back in the turn of the century. Should this be controlled by faculty, many of whom didn't really have a particular interest or expertise in it? Should it be controlled by alumni? Should it be controlled by outside forces, or should it be an undergraduate only entity? And we saw programs that were able to even be commercially successful run by a different 20-year-old every single time. From my ignorant vantage point, it seemed like that was not an uncommon model for esports right now, but this is professionalizing quite a bit, right? Like, I saw you talking about this on Twitter a little bit, and I know that there's it's a bit of a controversy about certifications or what kind of qualifications one would need to have to be successful in this industry.
Absolutely.
You know, afterwards, do you think that you have to have played collegiately to be a good coach? Do you need a certain certification or like explicit training to be a good coach? Or what do you think are the skills or traits needed to work in this world, given that it hasn't existed for 70 years, you know?
Of course. And speaking on somebody that might want to transition into the whole space, I'll answer on behalf of that individual. I would say that the biggest thing is to be open and transparent with the students about what they know and what they don't know and how they can learn from each other. The ability to be open about that, because it is a humongous learning curve, and the best places to learn how the landscape is going to work and how the culture is that faculty, that administrator working with the students in a very close way, so that both their goals align together and can make that work. In terms of basics, so in terms of basic, they just have to be open-minded about the whole situation. The faculty member does not need to play League of Legends to learn and coach it. If anything, you would give the coaching role to a student so they can develop that leadership ability. The role of an administrator is to ensure that the program can operate under levels that is acceptable by the rest of the campus, and to see if they could push towards investment and stuff along, represent the students' best interests to the rest of campus administrators. That's basically what that individual should be doing, rather than being all in on ensuring competitive success, because they're more than likely not, they wouldn't be qualified to do so. They could apply like life lessons, mental lessons that a football team can share, competitiveness. The mental game is humongous in esports, and I'm sure that can be applied if the administrator is runs other teams too, or has a familiarity along those lines. But that's where the cross between traditional sports and esports, that's the best bridge to cross over, because the mental game is very strong in both, in similar sides. But aside from that, culture is different. between students. I would say that would be my answer.
That makes sense.
I'm curious, you know, we often talk about college athletics on the field being the front porch for the university. I'm curious if you're talking to an administrator and they're thinking about starting up their program. When you talk about end goals for a lot of these programs, what can it be for some of the universities that are thinking about getting into this space?
End goals that I least like to say from my perspective is to ensure that the gamer, the person that goes to school, they feel represented by the campus through the investments that they make towards that particular demographic. I look at the esports space as an opportunity to engage more students that they can't have in traditional sports. That would be my goals, essentially, more so than replacing football in terms of marketing or stuff along those lines. Like, I don't see the esports program being the whole face of an athletics program within a university. The only place where that's applicable are private institutions that are relatively small. For example, you may have never heard of Maryville University or Harrisburg University in the realm of traditional sports, because they're more than not a science institute or very specialized in a particular subject. However, because of the humongous investment they made into esports, they are a known name in our community. And those goals align, because more than half or not, the players also want that kind of education, engineering, arts, stuff along those lines, because those goals aligned with the university itself. But speaking on from a public university standpoint, because San Jose State is huge, I look at it as a goal to have increased student retention and to enhance their on-campus experience.
You know, I mean, this is similar to what I've heard other both students and administrators tell me about their programs. And, you know, from a competitive standpoint, one of the more attractive things is, you're right, if you're a school like Marysville or like a Case Western or even some of these smaller, I mean, I think in the Peach Belt were some of the in the southeast part of the country were some of the early adopters. Mm-hmm. And they're like, listen, if you get a good graduate assistant and you spend $100,000 on building a good physical lab, you can go play Alabama and kick their ass.
Yes.
Or you could go play like a big state school. And like, right, I mean, out west, it's Boise has a strong program, right? Mm-hmm. And Irvine and some of these places that don't have $90 million athletic budgets or enormous endowments, you can be an early adopter and you can be successful. Whereas, you know, no offense to San Jose State football, last year notwithstanding.
Of course, except for last year. That's an outlier. I hope not,
it's generally not the case. But the other thing that you said here that's I've been thinking about a lot was about helping students feel like they're connected to the campus and seen in a way that maybe they wouldn't have before. And right, like I don't think I'm speaking out of turn here. When I look at the rosters for a lot of these collegiate esports programs, a lot of them pretty heavily Asian male,
yes,
which is less the case in a lot of other more traditional athletic programs. Mm-hmm. And I've had schools tell me like, part of this is literally a diversity recruitment attempt to create something that help might improve Asian representation or certain other kind of smaller minority representation groups on campus. But that being said, I haven't talked to many esports athletes who are women. I haven't talked to a ton who are Latino or who are African American. Mm-hmm. And I've had other coaches say, you know, both from a Title IX and from just an inclusion standpoint, we have a lot of work to do.
Right.
From your perspective, and you know, you're at a really diverse campus and a really diverse metropolitan area. Mm-hmm. Are there things that you've seen other programs do well in trying to bring different kinds of people to be involved and to be seen within esports?
I think one of the biggest ways that you can tackle that in a collegiate community, and to preface this is an industry-wide situation where it's very male-dominant, leans definitely towards Asian Americans and stuff along those lines. So this is an industry whole process, and the place of collegiate is a small part of that bigger goal that the industry is trying to create. What I've seen from the collegiate level that I think works very well is to have minorities groups be represented in leadership and work towards showing the general gaming community that if these individuals are in leadership going into esports, prove that they can lead an entire program, and they might not be the majority. That is a good way to encourage that inclusivity. I see to tackle this situation within or to increase diversity through the casual gaming community more so than just having binary teams, which I don't agree at all, because we can absolutely run co-ed teams 100%. We're not care about the binaries, about everything along those lines, and have representation for transgender non-binaries too. I just see that we need to, and also the reason why too is that because gaming is relatively toxic. Lean's young, people may be ignorant or want to say some funny stuff, also hiding in anonymity through a username rather than in face, you know. Sure. It can breed that kind of toxicity that nobody would show in real life. And obviously, I think collegiate can play a role in education of that, to stamp out that kind of toxicity, make the people that define gaming as their social construct to grow up a little bit in that regard. But I see that a lot. You tackle it from the casual gaming community perspective out of all collegiate.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen that crossover already with the Myers-Leonard situation, where he, you know, was gaming and on a stream and got cut by the Heat. I'm curious, you know, we've seen some competitions pop up that are, you know, loosely affiliated with some of the current college conferences. Where are we going in terms of governance? I know it's a difficult question to kind of ask, but are we going to, in 5 to 10 years, see the SEC championship of League of Legends? Are we going to see the Pac-12 champion in whatever your title it might be facing off against an SEC champion or something like that? Is that where we might potentially be able to get to in a couple of years?
That is a great question. And for speaking on the League of Legends scene again, Riot Games has been very good at developing conference relationships. For example, the conference at San Jose State in Mountain West Conference is a part of the League of Legends tournament system, where instead of playing instead of San Jose State versus UC Riverside or any other school in the West Coast, we are against Boise State, Fresno State, and the ones that we see are rivals within that replicate that system in athletics. And I think that's really cool. And I think Riot is doing, and that's a good step to understanding how we can incorporate that kind of traditional sports structure into esports. I think the problem with that goes towards, for the most part, dealing with hundreds of students within my program for the past 3 years and explain to them that we're in the Mountain West Conference, all of them ask, what is that? All of them ask, what's Mountain West? Sure. And then I ask, do you go to the football games? I do, by the way. They don't. Yeah. They might not understand the significance of the conferences as much as traditional sports do, because esports is not limited by conferences for the most part. It is limited by regions. It's easier to be limited by regions because of ping. So, like, I don't see... But Boise and us are a humongous rival. I love Doc Haskell of Boise, by the way. Incredible human being, pioneer within the collegiate space. Yeah. But I see, at least in my Valorant team for SJSU, we consider our rival to be UC Irvine. And UC Irvine doesn't have much of an impact in athletics in general, but because of their humongous support for esports, we consider them the rivalry. And we want to face teams that are not outside of our conference rather than inwards. So I think it is tough to say what 5 and 10 years will look like and the involvement of conferences or governance within esports. All I can say in terms of governance, I hope that Riot Games will continue to lead the way in terms of that direction, because it should be the developer's responsibility to guide how they want to go moving forward.
Sure. I mean, it's funny. We see the same similar issue in our world too, right? You can't manufacture a rivalry.
No.
And there is the best ones, the organic ones, grow out of decades and decades of shared competition and ideally shared interaction in real life.
Yes.
Like, you guys are going to run into Irvine grads. your whole life. Whereas, you know, you might not see somebody that went to Utah State for 3 years outside of athletics, right? Like that's what you want. And so I would imagine trying to kind of staple an organization or competitive structure that's not relevant to the lived experience of your teammates wouldn't work in the name of, like, you know, trying to attract commercial sales somewhere else. It wouldn't work as well. I've heard that something similar talking to people in the esports community on the East Coast. I mean, and shoot, the Peach Belt, they'll play people in Hawaii.
Yeah.
And I'm sure the ping has just got to be outrageous.
Oh my
there.
Gosh.
Hawaii has that disadvantage.
Just straight up. It sucks to be them, honestly.
No, which is interesting for our audience, because that's the same thing for football. I mean, it's not ping, but being so geographically isolated creates a bunch of other disadvantages too. I can think of a worse life than living in Hawaii and, you know, having that the ocean out my window and playing League of Legends all day. But yeah, for trying to play somebody in San Diego and then being 2 seconds behind everything, I could see how that'd be a big issue.
Of course. It is an issue.
Let me ask you about another issue that one of my readers pointed me kind of flagged to me here that I would have never even thought about. Mm. Do people gamble on this?
Collegiate esports has made it known that no, if a program is ever affiliated with a gambling site, they ensure that there would be no partnership between League of Legends, Riot Games, and that particular program. They are doing their damnedest to stamp out gambling, from my perspective, because I see it in the tournament rule books all the time, intentionally not to be affiliated with any gambling site. I have not ran into a situation where I've seen collegiate esports gambling yet. Because, I mean, speaking off the cuff and as a joke, I would be betting on my players so much and hopefully make a whole heap of money, because we have one of the best Valorant programs in all of America. Trust me, I'd be betting on my team, to say the least.
Thanks, Pete Rose.
Yeah, listen, if you're going to gamble for your guys, right?
Exactly. Like,
Well, no, but I mean, we joke, and part of this, I joke because I'm not as familiar, but like, this nearly broke college basketball. You know, even as it was becoming very popular, a lot of players got involved with point shaving, and not necessarily betting on themselves to lose, but, you know, maybe I'll shave a little bit here off the spread. I mean, independent of the collegiate scene, just esports generally, not affiliated with institutions of higher learning, do people gamble on that?
Yes.
Are they more likely to gamble on an FPS or a turn-based strategy game, or are they gambling on Rocket League, or is it anything you can put a bet on?
It's relatively easy to just translate the infrastructure of gambling has in sports in general into esports and just gamble on the professional scene. I have not endeavored into that, thankfully, because I'm not relatively familiar with the professional scenes, and like, I don't feel confident I can make my money off of that kind of situation. But I do know that infrastructure.
I don't either.
Yeah, that infrastructure does exist in esports. I'm aware of that. Also, you kind of there's like other arguments in gaming in general, where like there's some relative loopholes in what is called surprise mechanics and loot boxing, and there's a whole Pandora's box in terms of minors having the ability to experience gambling, but through loopholes in gaming that it's legal and stuff along those lines. I am aware of those.
Brian and I both play. I think we both play FIFA, so I think we know a little bit about loot boxes already.
Yes.
But not on this scale. That, I mean, it is interesting because I guess I hadn't really thought about so much of how we approach problems within the traditional college athletic sphere is informed by how we've been doing it for 100 years, and in many cases, we haven't been doing it the right way. Like, you can go back and look at the Carnegie Report about amateurism or about gambling or about academic stuff. We're mostly fighting about the things, the same things before San Jose State was even a school. And part of what's exciting to me is because esports is pretty new, you have a chance to do things completely differently. Like, the whole concept of amateurism, as I understand it, is not a thing in esports. I would imagine many people affiliated with your program are either making some prize money or monetizing their Twitch streams, right?
Correct. There is opportunities within our players to genuinely earn money off of prize winnings.
Yeah. So one of the major things that we're talking about in the more brick and mortar sports is how universities can then help some of their athletes make money on the side, right? So if you're the star quarterback for San Jose State, and presumably in within the next year, that person will be able to sign an endorsement deal or sell ads on their Instagram and make a little bit of extra money, mm-hmm. which is something that your guys and girls are presumably could be doing now. As a coach or as a leader here, is there anything that you can do to help your players make more money from Twitch or make more money from something other than prize money? Or is that just, you just got to get good?
The get good aspect definitely makes things a whole heap easier. And I think when it comes to players that are affiliated within our program that play for our teams, the goals of what they want out of the program can be very different, because some just want that team experience. Some just want to play League of Legends and have a purpose. And the competitive environment is way different from just playing solo. And then there's some that genuinely want to try to take their hand in professional play and go through the amateur scene. Some of my players on my Valorant team are in amateur teams right now that have actually beaten very high profile esports organizations in the qualifiers. And there is some serious talent where they have talent where they can seriously consider if they want a professional player or run. And if those goals align and they want to seek out opportunities within the esports program, they are more than welcome to do so. We can, and one of the ways to do it is to promote the awareness that this player exists and that they're that damn good. We can definitely make sure that on, because awareness is everything, networking is everything in esports. People need to know who you are before nothing is relatively cold. They need the Twitter clout. They need that highlight to show out there if they want to pursue being a professional player, to let other team managers know that this person exists. And if you try them out, get them onto a highly huge organization like Cloud9, Team Solomid, 100 Thieves, Counter-Logic Gaming, the collegiate scene. And as a leader standpoint, I want to ensure that all the goals of our players is met, whatever they are. And for those that want to make money or for those that want to pursue professional, we will do so. And the way to do it is marketing.
That makes sense. I guess my last big question then, like, can you even see a world where you were sharing in some of those initiatives with the rest of the athletic department? Or would you want to work with them on some of these other things? I mean, I would imagine just from a marketing perspective, maybe a little bit less so at a place like yours, but if you got like 10 miles out, you know, on a Twitch stream with some of your players or got some of the football team or the soccer team involved, that would increase the notoriety of your organization on campus, mm-hmm. and also give the athletes some clout in your world. Mm-hmm. Is that the kind of thing that you would be interested or would want to pursue?
That is a good question, because I wouldn't know that answer, actually, because I've always operated under because San Jose State Esports is not operated under the athletics program within San Jose State University.
Right.
I've came to realize from working within club sports and Spartan Recreation and those goals, the goals of that auxiliary of San Jose State is completely different from the goals that is seen at athletics. I think my biggest fear is if athletics was to see esports as a revenue opportunity. And that's where my biggest hesitation comes, because my goals have always been to for the student and student involvement and all those goals along those lines. But to make money or to promote such things, I don't know if those goals would align. And that's why I'm incredibly hesitant whenever they approach us as a means to see if they can increase revenue in some capacity.
That's a good point. There are ways, certainly, for both entities to make money. But yeah, as maybe especially at a place like yours, the goals might not totally be aligned. It would be terrible if you and your buddies spent 15 years building something only for it to be almost colonized by an athletic department with different goals and that doesn't understand what you've built.
My biggest fear, you just said that right there.
Yeah. To have, you know, Learfield come in and write a check and change everything. Yeah. I get that. Again, seeing some similarities between this and maybe, you know, 1920s college football, just, mm-hmm. Less leather, I guess. Brian, have we missed anything here?
Yeah, I think the only question that I might throw in there is where do you see kind of the involvement of certainly these massive media companies who are already dealing with schools like, you know, San Jose State or, you know, some of the bigger Pac-12 programs? We've seen Twitch and Amazon be involved, certainly with the NFL. Where do you see the involvement of these major media companies and with collegiate esports?
That is a great question, because that is also relatively uncharted territory where the involvement of them can also not align with the goals and the general culture that esports has built, because the world of esports has been built on the internet this entire time. It has been built through Twitch.tv, through YouTube streaming. All the content creators and all the influencers in the realm of gaming and esports are all found online on the internet, accessible if you just type Twitch.tv in the web browser. In the involvement of mass media companies is so there's a level of aspect where it's like, oh my God, finally esports is going to be mainstream. That's humongous. I'm going to be on TV mama type moments. But at the same time, the goals may not align, because maybe those mass media companies, what is the ROI they're expecting? You're selling a completely different product to an audience that has never consumed esports or gaming on the television screen, in cable TV or anything along those lines. So it's interesting to see where the relationship or where the bridge will cross with the similarities, and they could push those goals forward. But if you just say, oh, ESPN wants to stream the finals of the collegiate, that's, I think, a remarkable opportunity. But at the same time, I'm hesitant on what their goals are more. And if it isn't met, it shouldn't be blamed on the community itself. It's just that the goals have always inherently been different, and the culture too, because you will watch esport games on your computer, not on the television screen. And I don't think that trend's going to change anytime soon.
It's kind of almost like fans of an indie band being a little bit conflicted when that band goes on MTV or kind of blows up a little bit, right? Like, on one hand, you've got to be excited when you see people, you know, whether that's a famous athlete or a musician or celebrity or just people that you know in your community getting into esports for the first time. Like, Rocket League is fun. Knowing other people are playing Rocket League, like, I get it. But also, it can dilute the community and the culture that you've built, something that's unique. And from what I've noticed, for a lot of people who are really into gaming, that's really important to them, because they might not have had access to other major communities on campus, or either explicitly or implicitly. So if you lose that to what you've built, I can see how that would be, you know, a personally harmful, right? It's just like people would complain if something happened to the Greek life system or to other major clubs like that. I don't really know there's a good answer for it, right? You want progress, but you want progress on your terms, not to be dictated to you.
Correct. And dictated to us under false expectations that I would believe wouldn't occur in the first place either. To make such humongous change without understanding our culture, because I would hope that that individual, joking aside, maybe they get the esports certificate, but like is very well a part of our scene and understands the differences between traditional media, traditional sports, than esports media and esports itself. Can you bridge those gaps together and make it work? I would hope so. I just think that if you throw money at it immediately and try to make change, it is potentially harmful. The thing with esports is it was developed. It's now a billion-dollar industry. Unbelievably, it's a global thing too.
Oh, yeah.
It's just that when compared to traditional sports, it was brought up in such a unique way, all on the internet, off of games that you wouldn't think people would love to watch, but people love to watch, myself included. So if traditional mass media or anyone that sees this as an opportunity for growth or revenue, I become extremely skeptical, and I hope that the people that lead such a change in esports to know what they're doing and understand the culture. It's not as easy as putting the League of Legends finals on ESPN1. That's almost impossible with the way that League of Legends is played, because you just do not ad break in the middle of a game. As much as NFL fans are already complain about advertisements, it's impossible to do so. And that's already a humongous revenue stream being declined just because of the nature of the games.
That's a good point. You know, one, I guess if we're to look at all of this here with some sense of optimism, is that, you know, I can see that the infrastructure around esports, both the collegiate level and generally, is growing a lot, especially as you have people who now have been playing and being involved for 6-7 years, wrap up their professional careers and get into coaching or get into the administration or get into management. And you have a team and a club and a college infrastructure didn't exist before. So I guess the hope is then when you finish your career, the people like you that have had experience running some of these clubs and have built some of this infrastructure can grow into this industry and help people make those decisions rather than just, you know, somebody like me coming in, like, how do you do, fellow kids, and dictating it. Brian and I have seen this in the digital media world when people have done this to us about things that I think that we knew and it didn't work so well. I can understand the skepticism in your world. Mm-hmm. Alan, it's been a pleasure. Where can our listeners find you and find some of your teammates on the internet?
We are SJSU_esports on Twitter. Find us there. And what a program looks like when it's run by so many passionate individuals that is around me. Check out your local esports program too, if you're affiliated with the college. Because I don't want to promote myself. I want to promote the entire industry and promote the entire student body, because I'm surrounded by so many people passionate in this industry that want that recognition, a little bit of recognition, or somebody from above in the echelon to look into what these students are doing. They're doing something great and they're investing into the future. You look at the rest of incoming freshmen from here on out, they have grown up on gaming. Not only have they grown up on gaming, they damn well did during this pandemic too. So my program is SJSU_esports on Twitter, but please look into your own esports program on your campus and have a talk with a student. They are more than happy to tell you about what goes on and happy to lend a hand in learning. There is a humongous learning opportunity by just speaking to a person like me.
Yeah, I'm happy to echo that. And I'll just say this, like, as I've been kind of trying to to familiarize myself more with this and with college esports, I have a couple of different newsletters coming on this soon. I've been delighted by how much the actual students love answering my stupid questions and talking about the world because they're excited about it. And honestly, like, it's harder for me to get a hold of your linebacker and have him, like, right, walk through shot study for me or even call up a volleyball player. But if you talk to somebody, you know, who's in Rocket League or in the FPS community, they are thrilled to talk. Alan, thank you again. Best of luck here with your squad here over the coming months, and hopefully you're able to get together again in person soon.
Thank you guys so much for this opportunity. For real.
Folks, this episode of Going for Two is sponsored by our friends at Proper Good. Proper Good makes some of the tastiest and healthiest zero prep meals that you could want. They're clean. They've got ingredients that you can actually spell and that you recognize. There's not a bunch of weird hyphens. There's no extra added sugar. There's no extra added unnatural things. And they're ready to eat in just 90 seconds. You just stick it in the microwave and you're good to go. You don't have to do any complicated prep work. And for somebody like me that's constantly juggling 9 different things all at the same time, that is, that's a lifesaver. Because otherwise I would just eat a bunch of lifesavers, which is not what we're trying to do here. You can get with the other great thing I think about Proper Good, beyond the fact that it's more nutritious than a pack of lifesavers, is that it's really flexible. You want plant-based, you want keto, you want gluten-free, you want dairy-free, you got it. Whatever your particular fitness or dietary situation is, Proper Good has some food options here for you. You can grab 10% off your first order by grabbing the link in the latest Extra Points newsletter or head down to eatpropergood.com. This episode is also brought to you by Extra Points, which just finished its big new relaunch. It has a big, beautiful website. Almost all of the links work at this point. We're able to do that. I'm able to create this new redesign, to host all of these new open record documents for everybody to look through because of readers like you. You can subscribe to Extra Points for free. You'll get 2 newsletters a week, but with a paid subscription, you get 4 newsletters a week and access to our private Discord, where we occasionally do audio office hours, answer questions, chat with your friends, and you get the warm, fuzzy satisfaction of knowing that you're helping support independent media. I have a different ad read code for this week. We got the ad reads working here. If at checkout you use promo code PODCAST, P-O-D-C-A-S-T, I figured that's going to be a little bit easier than Gopher2, that gets you 20% off. And that discount code is good for an entire year. That's promo code PODCAST at www.extrapointsmb.com. You know, I got to admit, I'm probably never going to get into most of the actual esports games. I have tried people playing, I've tried watching League of Legends before because I'm trying to understand what people are into. I don't think visually it's a product for me, but I understand why a bunch of other people like it. And after, I think, a conversation like that, it's hard to not feel excited about not just the commercial potential of this entity, but definitely more important about what it's doing for people's lives on campus. And for, I think, especially for a school like San Jose State, that would like to have more people stay on campus and build those relationships and come back to the school. This might be more effective for certain groups of people than their athletic department could ever hope to be.
Absolutely. And you talk about so many of the marketers out there, so many of the athletics folks out there, they're always trying to reach into those new demographics and really connect with people that are college age nowadays. And this is what a lot of them are doing. And I can't wait till we eventually kind of reach that nexus point to where you see, take a Zion Williamson, somebody with a massive social following who also likes to game and they're also one of the superstars on the field. I can't wait till we kind of reach that inflection point to where we are starting to see some real crossover between what's happening in athletics and what's happening with esports, because I think it's coming, because a lot of these kids nowadays they're playing, they're even playing with some of these coaches out there on the football side. It's going to come to a point where a lot of these athletic departments are going to have to get serious about not only what this is as an industry, but also what it can mean for their own schools individually as well.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about this before. It's part of the reason, I think, why we're both really excited about the return of the college football game, not just because we both really liked playing the college football game, but also people like playing video games. And you're right. It may be a world where athletic departments decide that they actually need to build relationships with their campus esports programs, not necessarily for revenue generation on their side, but because it's an important outlet of building the brand of their individual athletes. This is a name, image, and likeness issue for them. It's a way for them to build campus relationships or network with a different kind of people. And maybe that ends up happening through the college football video game. We'll get really meta and watch college football stars play themselves while talking about playing college football. Who knows? I mean, honestly, I would probably watch it. That's more accessible for me than some of these other games.
Yeah, and I think maybe that the NCAA video game could be that inflection point from administrators taking things seriously, because we've talked about it before, how big of a marketing vehicle it can be for your school. And if you're operating in some of these esports leagues, if EA Sports really decides to get involved, not only just with the video game itself, but involving these campuses around there, I think we've seen some success with Madden tournaments. You look at the Pro Bowl nowadays with the NFL, there's a Madden tournament associated with it. If we're maybe not too in the not too distant future, we're seeing the college football playoff championship game is also kind of led into on the Saturday before by a NCAA video game version. And I think we could start to see some of those kind of crossover events in the not too distant future. But I'm excited to see where this industry is moving forward, because it's already a $150+ billion industry. It's already a massive entertainment focus. And I think for athletics in particular, you've got to get on this train before it leaves station.
Yeah, it is. There's definitely money in it. But even still, at the end of the day, the thing that I'm going to remember is how excited Alan was about it. And in 5 years, what he and his classmates and his teammates are going to remember about the relationships that they've built and the experience they had building something, whether then they spend their careers building within esports or building construction companies or building, you know, HR departments or anything else. All right. Like this is why people feel so fondly about fraternities or about club and intramural sports or other things or their campus newspapers or a slew of other things. This enterprise still is allegedly about education and about student experience. And perhaps there's something that the esports community can tell the athletic side, not just about branding, but about the student experience component there as well. Brian, this has been a pleasure here. Where can the people on the internet find you now that I think you've had a chance to catch your breath now that the draft is over?
Yeah, a lot of draft content. You can always find it on my Twitter page at Brian D. Fisher, and a couple news events, some spring meetings coming up for a lot of the college conferences we'll be following over the next couple of weeks. So a big week in the college sports industry, and also a big week overall in terms of the football is kind of passing us by in terms of the draft, and we're turning more of our attention, not just on spring football, but what the 2021 season is going to bring for us.
Yeah, this is when I worked for Vox, the end of the NFL draft kind of meant like the start of summer vacation. And that's when like the real capital O offseason stories happen. But with a podcast like this and with my newsletter, there isn't really an offseason because like the more esoteric or the more administrative, the more granular level stuff that you finally get some time to dig into in May and June and July, that's our wheelhouse, baby. We will not have any shortage of stuff to talk about. I can be found at Matt Brown EP on Twitter. Drop me a line. I'm at matt@extrapointsmb.com. That's my email address. You can, of course, find Extra Points at extrapointsmb.com. It's been fun, friends. That's Brian. I'm Matt. Thanks for listening. We'll catch up with you next week.